Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Thank you for listening in. I'm one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Susan. We're calling from the farm because I'm sort of iced in here on the road, so we're going to do something special today and do a show by phone. I'm phoning it in.
Now, I have to say that this is something special for KHOI. This is community radio. This is mostly volunteer, including our wonderful engineer, Jackie Norman, who made it out this morning. And, of course, to have a call-in host is probably a first for live radio in the area, don't you think, Paul?
Yeah, we'd have to check the records, but it has to be one of the first times anyway. And this is our fun drive for the spring, and it's really a good time to talk about really what we do, Susan, the talk show we do, Local Talk, where we try to, on Wednesdays, this is our day to look at the communities in the surrounding area, and we've been to promote every festival, every activity, every special opening. I think most of the community theater productions, and we've done some road trips to great places, haven't we, Susan?
Oh, yes, we sure have. And actually, we started that before we went on the air, when I thought that I couldn't ever be live on the air, and I couldn't ever do an interview. And I went along with you as your technician because you're great radio voice and your experience in live radio that went back to the 1960s, is that right?
Yeah, I would have been I baptized into radio at Luther College, and I was program director of the radio station. And actually, I had a staff of 19, and we had great people. And that's the old technology, tape and reel-to-reel and turntable. So, and actually, Susan, you, who are in my age group, have mastered this new digital technology far better than I have. So I'm dependent on you. I'm just the guy that comes and talks.
Well, this is one of the great things about KHOY, is that you see people discover talents they didn't know they had and blossom in very unexpected ways to them. But, of course, we don't do this just for the benefit of our volunteers. We do this to create community with our listeners. You do that very well instinctively because you've lived here all your life, at least in the area.
That's true. My career was in Des Moines, but I actually retired to the house I grew up here. This farm south of Story City, about 2 miles, and so it's already been great fun to do all kinds of great volunteer things, teaching in the schools and volunteering here and there. And KHOI has been one of the highlights of that, and I've really enjoyed it because look at all the folks we've met, Susan, in the time that we've done our road trips and featured all the local happenings and surrounding communities, and I wouldn't trade that for anything. And, you know, when you look at the volunteers who come to the office, every time I come, there's someone I don't know, and there have been teenagers there, high school students, college students, people in our age group, people who've dreamed of doing a radio program about, for instance, 8-track garage sales. Who would ever think that would be on radio? But we have it.
We have it.
KHOI.
And it's a real hit. Now, what you just said about high school students, most of our program today is about high school students. And the first segment, which is recorded, is a real special for KHOI. Luke Gran and a couple of his middle school students from Gilbert, who are working on a restoration project, land restoration project, came in last week and said they wanted to be recorded. And Ursula was available, amazingly. She made time to sit down and record an interview with them. And we felt that was really something that would be terrific to play today. So those of you, though, who know that this is a membership drive, know that before we listen to our students that we need to talk to you about how you can become members if you aren't already, and to remind you that we still have about $8,000 in just operating expenses. That's paying the rent, the utilities, because there's a lot of electricity for radio broadcasting, and heat, and, well, I did mention utilities. But the just what we need to do to keep the Pentorium going, and then we now have, of course, we have special things, and which we can talk about later. So if you would remember, it's a basic membership is $55. A premier membership is $100, and we really like our premier members to be able to do that. Sustaining memberships, which we'd like to have more of, are $20 per month or $240 per year. And, of course, you could choose to have a sustaining membership for more than that. And we are mostly volunteer-run, but we do have our operations manager, who, of course, really keeps all of the syndicated programs as well as our many locally produced programs on the air in the appropriate times, and helps us with a lot of troubleshooting, I have to mention. And the easiest way to join is to go online at khoifm.org and press the yellow donate button, or you can pledge by calling 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878. But the most interesting and fun way to do it, if you are downtown, is just to stop in at the Pentorium, 410 Douglas in downtown Ames, and say hello if you know us, and say hello and you'd like to see the station, which is very impressive. I think we're going to listen to our students. Luke Gran is the DeForester, who's the director of their program, and the students are Amy Taylor and Celia Bust.
I'm a forester, and I have my own company called Prudentera. It means wisdom or foresight with the land, and I try to practice that with recommendations to landowners in Iowa about how they can improve the quality of their farms, their forests, prairies, or streams. It's adaptive ecosystem management, so we look to the past as an example of what a resilient land use was, and then try to mimic those systems in the flesh, you know, today, recreating some of those communities of plants and restoring the ecosystem disturbances like fire and browsing and grazing to try to achieve a certain objective. So I design and then actually offer to do the work, my team, to implement the designs.
Mm-hmm. What are you doing with these young people?
Well, when you're a private business owner, you start to think really strategically about how you want to spend your time, because every day is a kind of up to you, in a sense. After a few years of working for myself, it really helped me to think, I'd sure like to give this knowledge away a couple times a year. You know, I can't do it all the time because it's my livelihood, but I'd like to create strategic learning opportunities that are really beneficial. And I'd like to have those opportunities be for kids. You know, I don't have any of my own children, but I really love being with kids, and I want to treat the next generation the best way I can. So I think sharing my positive enthusiasm about something good, a kind of good news about the environment, is really important for kids that might be a kind of a scared of what they're hearing on the news, you know. And so ecosystem management to me has a great story to tell. As well as getting kids outside is so critical, because we have childhood obesity problems, and the cutbacks in field trips that I've been seeing in my community, the loss of the public sector foresters in the state of Iowa, as well as other public entities, have been on the decline generally. So I'd like to make a small contribution to improve my community with the free educational events. And so I reached out for a few years and finally got through a friend connection, connected to a gal named Kedra Hamilton at Central Elementary School in Nevada. About 30% of those students are on free and reduced lunches, and most of them don't have opportunities to explore Iowa's woodlands on their free time, you know, outside of school. So it seemed like a great fit to develop a project and start learning how to help kids learn about nature.
Hmm. So this is now a regular program in the Nevada school?
We'd sure like it to be. Yeah, we've done a successful one. Now we just got a $500 grant from the foundation, the school district foundation, so they seem very supportive.
So when you said you did a successful one, what did you actually do?
Yeah, we just completed the first of 2 days in the field, working with students on doing forest management. Management activities that are well suited to the kids, you know, their physical abilities and whatnot. So it was a very collaborative process, iterative process, where I worked with my client, the landowner. I worked with Kedra Hamilton and her school district learning outcomes, and we developed this curriculum to customize to the site to fit their to fit the land's needs as well as the student learning outcomes. So
essentially, let me see if I get this straight. Sure. You're bringing young people into the work you do professionally, and have them involved with projects that you're doing. Have them involved with the jobs that you're doing. And using that as a kind of a teaching school as well as a professional project. Am I getting that right?
Yeah. There's some overlap with the professional project mm-hmm. objectives, but it's mostly just really fun to get to, like, the kids aren't replacing the work that we would do.
They're not like free labor.
No, yeah. They're very expensive of my time. You know, like I give a lot of my time to help.
So it's more of a teaching environment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that they feel – we want to give first through fourth graders a very positive experience in nature with a trained objective, a trained experienced forester, and let them get a taste for what – ecosystem restoration might be like as a future career,
and how many young people were involved?
Kedra is the team leader of a multi-age first through fourth grade curriculum. So 250 kids.
250 all at once?
We split them in half. So 125.
125 kids. Oh my goodness!
Yeah, first and second graders the first week, which we just completed last couple weeks ago. And then 100 and so students with eight parents per class. So eight parents,
wow.
Volunteers, plus teachers, plus six volunteers from Ames High School students to help coordinate and, you know, run around with kids. And then the Gilbert folks here, the two here with us today, and one more from Iowa State University. Plus we had a nonprofit employee, Dan Haug, who's with the Prairie Rivers of Iowa. Mm-hmm. He volunteered as well.
Wow, this is a huge undertaking. So
it didn't seem that big.
I thought you were going to say like 10 people. 125.
No.
Okay. All right. So you are not one of those students. You are somebody who was helping to supervise or run this, right?
Yes. So what CJ and I did was we taught live staking to the first and second graders and then to the third and fourth graders.
Okay, so explain live staking.
Live staking is when you take a long metal rod and you stick it into the ground on the side of a bank or stream, and then you put a live stake, which is like a cut-off piece of a tree, and what it'll do is it'll grow roots in the side and prevent erosion.
Mm-hmm. So you were teaching this to 125 kids?
Yes.
So does that mean that 125 trees got planted?
More or less, yeah. We tried to give each student one to plant. We really wanted to get them excited and interacting with the project just so that they can learn a lot about how important it is.
So basically you planted a forest.
We tried to, yeah.
Yeah. And on how big of a piece of land was this forest planted?
About a half an acre in size, so it's a really small area. With live stakes, you have to put a bunch in per square foot because mm-hmm. they're just these little chunks of shrubs, you know, and you need to put them at maybe 3 feet apart or 4 feet apart, you know, in a grid pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And it was specifically done on a very erosive section of a stream bank, which is threatening the client's home.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And it's also associated with a tile outlet. So, you know, the tile that goes around everybody's homes, you know, to kind of get the water out of the basement.
Yeah.
Well, 25 years ago, it was just stuck out with the side of the hill. And over 25, 30 years, the stream has actually moved closer. And the bank was compromised as a result of that tile outlet eroding. So
what did you plant?
We planted different livestock. Like the tree was a red
osier dogwood.
Red over dogwood, yeah. And then there was a lot of other different kinds, but they were maybe 2 feet long, and we just cut them up and tried to plant them wherever we could. It was a little difficult because the ground was so frozen, and it was really slippery in the bank. CJ actually fell in.
You fell in the water?
Well, I was already in the water just to make sure that if any kid fell over or whatever, I was in there to help him out. So I had on hip waders, and I may or may not have slipped on some of the mud, and then it got in my hip waders,
Wow.
So I had soaked jeans for the rest of the day.
Oh, my goodness. And it was not warm out, right?
It wasn't cold, but mm-hmm. It wasn't warm either. So
what were you doing besides standing in the river looking for people that fell in?
Children.
I was doing mostly that, but I was also encouraging because sometimes the kids would get frustrated. So just keeping them entertained.
Now, how did you end up doing this? I mean, how did you end up in that position?
Our science teacher talked about a opportunity like this through Dan Haug. He told her about it, and so she asked us if there was anybody that wanted to do it, and Amy and I stepped forward and said that it would be a good opportunity for us.
And you're both high school students, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so how was it?
It was really fun. It was a blast.
Yeah.
Why? What was fun about it?
Getting into the environment and getting children, especially at that age, excited about helping out their watershed and having a fun activity like that they're going to remember for the rest of their lives. It's a great feeling. And we got to learn more about our local watershed and how we can help too. So it was just a great experience all around.
So walk us through it a little bit. What actually happened on the day when these 125 kids, they all showed up at once?
So they all showed up, and they kind of got split into separate groups. We had different stations. We were part of the poke station, which is the live staking. And so they went through each station like 20, 30 minutes at each, and we would just rotate through. And so they got to learn about how to poke, plucking. I don't remember the rest of them, but then they got to hike at the end too.
Planting.
So what were some of the other stations?
They all started with the letter P.
What?
They all started with the letter P. You know, with kids, you got to make it fun. And,
okay.
You know, so poke, mm-hmm. plant. They got to plant a shrub or a tree and a and
what
a
is lot. Poke?
Poke is the live staking.
That we
live staking.
Yeah.
Okay.
Poke.
Okay. And then plant is?
Plant is, we had a Trees Forever staff member. Trees Forever is a nonprofit in Iowa based out of Marion. They've got staff all over. And they came and taught kids how to plant container trees and container shrubs. So they got that kind of planting done. And then one of our Iowa State volunteers, Kenneth Prell, a Ames High alumnus, he taught them how to plant plugs, which are little container plugs of roots that with the little shoots on top. And so they got to plant those different things. And then pick up and place. The kids got to go into a stream, pick up cobble from the stream, and place it underneath an erosive tile outlet. That's how this whole project started. Back in January, I said, hey, kids, go find a photo. Take a photo of a tile outlet. Where does the water go when it hits your house, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so they all, you know, we got 100 photos of all these different tile outlets and things. And so then we were able to connect their personal tile outlets to this erosive forest tile outlet. And then they actually got to help heal it. And then the final thing was just a hike. They got to hike with a P, hike around the woods, you know, and have a really good experience looking at.
Where's the P in hike?
We just added it on the front.
Oh. That's cheating. Did they like hiking?
They loved it. It was probably their most we heard the most feedback about the hiking.
Mm-hmm.
So we're so glad we included that. Because
why did they love the hiking?
They love to walk through the woods. They don't get a lot of woodland walks, you know, especially mm-hmm. not without a trail. It was just kind of a very like open woodland, mm-hmm. you know, very exploratory. They got to see really incredible elevation change from the bottom of the stream to the top of the hill.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Ames High School kids just did a great job of, you know, they picked three key things to show them on this 20-minute hike, and they just did a really good job of getting kids excited about nature and the woods.
What was your most favorite moment of the process?
Mine was definitely the children. A lot of them kind of, when they would get, like, uninterested, like, we would have to, like, wave a stick around or something like that. It was really entertaining to watch them learn, like, you know, the way that they respond after you tell them something interesting, like, this is going to prevent soil erosion and this is going to turn into a tree that's going to be this tall. They're like, oh, wow, wow, whoa. Like, just seeing that response is really cool.
Was it your impression that most of them knew a lot about nature already, or was this really, really new information?
I feel like a majority of this was new information. You know, on field trips that they usually go on, they'll look for different types of leaves or pine cones. And in this one, it was a lot of hands-on interactive activities. Mm-hmm. So I think it was a lot better than a normal field trip that they would have done earlier.
So what about you? What did you like best about doing it?
I kind of want to just piggyback off of Amy's. I like working with kids. I like to see them learn and watch them grow. And I think that keeping our environment safe is a really good thing for kids to know, especially growing up. So that was really awesome.
Let me ask you something. You referred to people being worried or hearing things in the news. Do you feel worried about the future of the environment?
Yeah, that's always a concern. We live here, so we need to take care of it. So that's always very important, especially getting the younger kids, giving them knowledge on how, so they can grow up and keep spreading the knowledge of how to keep our environment safe. That's really important.
How do you feel?
Yeah, like CJ said, it's really all about inspiring them at a young age to, like, have a good time, and then maybe when they're older, they'll remember back on this and be like, oh, yeah, I want to get involved in my own neighborhood and outside in my backyard. You know, there's so many things that we could be doing that we aren't already. So just inspiring the kids is probably the overall goal of this project.
Do you feel that it inspired you?
Oh, most definitely, yeah. I didn't know much about my watershed, and then after this, there's things that I didn't think that I could do to help out, and now I know that even, like, all ages could participate in cleaning up our watersheds.
Sounds like you guys should have a radio show.
Yeah, well, there's so much to
You've got
share.
Lots of information to share.
Oh, yeah.
So this is kind of a coordinated effort between different school districts and a private business and people that have private landowners and teachers.
It's a very much Story County-wide community event, you know, initiative. It's, you know, we had this core group, the landowner, super concerned about, you know, his private property, of course. He also owns an adjacent 60 acres he's just recently given away to the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. And that land will forever be a public access, in the future, public access place to enjoy nature. And so this is kind of the tip of the spear, because the whole site has tremendous challenges. There's 180,000 acres of crop ground that's draining through the Squaw Creek watershed. And the banks look like this, straight vertical banks, 12, 15 feet high. There's so much sediment constantly eroding everywhere. Part of the stream threatened to cut straight through the bottomland CRP, or Conservation Reserve Program prairie, that they've recently been put in about six, seven years ago. You know, there's a generation of work to do here and learning just on this one site. So, you know, our hope is that we can have a really high quality offering to the students, and then light little fires like this all around the county. I would love to do this at a different school every 6 months, you know, just bounce around the county. And I think there's no limit to the applicability to the curriculum.
So you see this as one day events?
Yeah, I think I could do, I could just myself do one or two a year probably. It just takes a lot of preparation and coordination.
So it's kind of a real hands-on field trip for a class. Or a group of classes.
Definitely.
So one or two a year. What do you call this?
Junior foresters.
Junior foresters.
Yep.
Okay.
And we, the reason why I think private sectors should be involved, the private sector should be involved in these kind of activities, is because of the practicality of it. You know, like, the private sector is constantly dealing with these kind of horrific problems, you know, environmental, natural resource challenges. And rather than kind of just water it down, make it so general and broad like we often have to do with our curriculums in schools, let's get really detailed and focused. Let's feel this soil. Let's talk about these specific plants. You know, the live stakes we cut were cut from the watershed, from other remnant forests. I really think the private sector has a role to play in working with our schools. And if there's good oversight, you know, I think there should be no concerns about a private business working collaboratively with public teachers.
Mm-hmm. So having done, this was your first one, right?
Yep.
Did it go as planned?
It was even better than we planned it, yeah.
Explain.
We had more volunteers than we thought we'd get. We had more chaperones attend than we thought we'd get. We had better feedback from the students than we thought we expected. What else happened? The weather cooperated. You know, mm-hmm. We had a beautiful sunny day. There was no slipping or injuries. You know, the site was an active forest management zone. There's pokey stuff all over the place. You know, we did all the prep we could to help it make it safe, but the kids did a great job of being careful and walking through the woods. There weren't any disciplinary problems, and the kids did a great job of acting professional.
Mm-hmm. So what did they say to you? What was something a kid said to you?
They were so curious. Why are we doing this? Why does the stream look like this? They were very curious to understand and learn more. I was really inspired by the landowner, because like not every landowner is going to welcome 250 strangers to their mm-hmm. to their erosion problem, you know, this embarrassing, you know, threat to their land, maybe to show off a natural resource challenge that they're dealing with. So I was really impressed by the landowner's commitment. The landowner probably spent 20 or 30 hours at least coordinating, you know, talking to the neighbors, getting everybody notified, and just really inspiring.
In case you just tuned in, this is KHOI Community Radio, and you just heard from station manager Ursula Rudenberg speaking with Luke Gran, the forester and owner of Frutentera, and students Amy Taylor and Cecilia Bust from Gilbert High School, who have been working on a project to restore some land here in Story County. And Paul, what did you think of those? Did you know any? You've been up to Gilbert. You've actually worked with students in the fifth grade up at Gilbert Schools, right?
Right. I teach Speak Up, which is a program to teach kids how to do public speaking. And every student writes their own speech. We have a timekeeper, an MC, and all that. It's a fun program. So everyone has their own speech to give. And I'm sure, very possibly, that some of those students were in my class at one time. And I was so impressed by that segment because look how that acquaints students with their ecology, the world in which they live, and they see the interconnection between how we drain water and how that affects the natural environment. And they have a hands-on opportunity, especially in this digital age, to get out and get dirty. I like that, too.
Well, that really is one of the things that KHOI can uniquely do, is to feature the schools and have the interaction. I mean, the students, actually, I'm pretty sure I interviewed some students from Gilbert who were maybe in the same class when they were doing water monitoring. And that was part of a class project, that water monitoring. But it was in conjunction with Prairie Rivers of Iowa. And they were doing a presentation, they called it a listening session, on the Keighley watershed. And I went up to the Gilbert City Hall to listen in on that and to talk to a couple of the students, and we had a short segment on one of our programs on it. So this kind of really building community through communication is the purpose of KHOI, and something that we can do. And not only did the students learn a lot, but I think those who are listening are probably pretty impressed with what the schools are doing and what kind of students are in our schools.
Well, you know, I think that when you look at what's out there on the dial, and we have to look at the broad scope here, most people are in their cars tuning through the radio and checking through the stations and just searching for what's ever on the air. When you look around the dial, what you have is a lot of political talk and screaming and angry talk show hosts, or music, of course, that's always there. But the only places to get what we do on the dial are public radio and KHOI. And public radio, of course, now is statewide. KHOI is local, so that's going to be heard by people here who are directly affected by the things we do and hear about and get on the air, like this program we just went through. How many people in our listening area knew that that program was helping and what it was featuring for kids? So that's something we've done already today that's unique and more unique and local than public radio is. And all those folks who support public radio really appreciate that and send in their dollars. And that's all we're asking here at KHOI, is that you have that same respect and interest in supporting our station as you do in public radio, because, of course, we don't have the income of commercial stations, just as public radio doesn't. And I always give to public radio, and I give to KHOI, because I know that that's what keeps it on the air, and it's such a refreshing change from what you find elsewhere on the dial. That's what I really like about public radio and KHOI. And here locally, we have to remember that we don't have a budget like public radio. We don't have a drove of professional people being paid to do various things. And so for this local input and for this local flavor of a radio station, that's worth supporting too. And that's why I really hope that our listeners get on board and support us financially, because when you look at what you do every day and how many people might listen to us on the dial, as they do public radio, you really have to take that step further and say, you know, money keeps this on the air, and they don't have the income source that a lot of other stations have. And so I need to do my part to make sure I can still find that material on my dial. And so people who make that connection hopefully take the step forward to where they can support us. The old biblical saying, where your treasury is, where your heart is. And so that's where your heart will be also. Well, that's true in radio when you support local talk and all the other programs we do on KHOI, because money that you send in says, I support you, I listen to you, I appreciate the local content, and I want to keep that going. And that's why you hit that yellow donate button, right, Susan?
Right. You hit that yellow donate button, and or you come into KHOI, right into 410 Douglas at the Pantorium, and talk to us and look around and hopefully leave us a contribution. Or you can pledge by calling 515-292-2878. We are now here with our three Ames High students for the second section. Here we are with Thomas DeLay.
Hello. I'm a senior at Ames High School. I'm the leader of Young Democrats and organizer of the upcoming April 20th walkout.
And Grace Kim.
I'm a junior at Ames High, and I'm a leader of CHEF, which is Students Helping Eliminate Poverty and Hunger.
And Ludico.
Yeah, hi. My name's Ludico. I'm a junior at Ames High School, and I'm the president of Mayor's Youth Committee.
Of what committee?
Mayor's Youth Committee.
Mayor's Youth Committee. But you don't represent the Mayor's Youth Committee. Is that what I was told
by
Thomas?
We haven't gotten the official word from our leaders yet or the mayor to put our names onto the walkout. So.
Okay. And this is, as I think you maybe have guessed, this is for the April 20th National Student Walkout. And there are, according to the online source, there are 2,400 schools involved. And when I looked at the beginning of the week, there were only 2,200. I'm not sure that it's going to happen in every single place, but we can talk about that later. So, Paul,
Yes, I hope everyone's wearing their headsets so we can converse and talk. I'm the disembodied voice who's not sitting on the farm here. So welcome, Thomas, Grace, and Luda. And I wanted to make sure, Thomas, you're with the Democrats there at the school.
Yes, I am.
To what extent do you view this as a partisan issue?
I don't view it as a partisan issue at all. 94% of the country agrees with universal background checks, which is one of the main things that we're advocating for. We're merely sponsoring the event. We're trying to organize it. It's not because it's a Democrat or Republican issue. You can certainly be a Republican who agrees with common sense gun legislation and show up. Or you could be a Democrat that, you know, agrees with it as well. It's not a party thing. It's just, you know, an ideological thing maybe, but it's not a party thing.
Well, I want to go round robin here. Thomas, Grace, and Luda, this is on a personal basis. What motivated you to get involved with this program and with this effort?
I don't know. I learned a lot about the shootings, especially starting from last year when my APUSH teacher, shout out to Mr. Mooney. But I think it really hit me when about 3 weeks ago, my sister texted me from her college saying that there was a reported gunman there. And I was taking a nap then. So then when I woke up, I saw that, and that could have been her last text to me. So I think that's when I started caring more.
Okay.
Personally, I never took a huge intense of like, you know, what can I do? I never thought of that until Officer Schaefer was telling me about a gun threat in Ames High School, and I was like, oh my gosh, it's a problem that everyone faces, even in the small town of Ames. It's a problem that we have to deal with. And so after that, I looked at what I can do, and here I am.
For me, it's just I think we have a moral responsibility to do something about it for the future generations coming into the high school and just into education in general. Recent Washington Post study showed that over 187,000 students had witnessed gun violence in their schools. That's unacceptable, in my opinion. I think something must be done. And if our legislators aren't doing something about that, unfortunately, we have to. So I just think we have the responsibility to do something.
So when you put this together, what sort of things happened? You had to talk with the administration. What was the mechanics of putting this together, this organizing the students there to participate?
Yeah, so I've been handling a lot of the logistical issues. What we basically did is I called a meeting of all, you know, the major activism clubs and talked with everyone who wanted to be interested in planning it. We came up with kind of a game plan to show our administration so they would know just out of respect what we were doing, why we were doing it. So after that, I sat down with Mr. Evans, our principal, and we talked about just the security of the issue. Of course, he couldn't condone it or, you know, go against it that hard, but we wanted to let him know to make sure everyone was safe and people wouldn't be suspended from sports and stuff like that for walking out. After that, I talked with the police department to make sure that there'd be some police department presence there. They were very supportive, very, very kind. Commander Tuttle and Officer Schaefer were great resources, really helpful in the whole planning process of, you know, telling us how to be safe, what we should do. And giving us the resources to really have a constructive walkout, hopefully. And then we talked with the community a little bit. Because we have such a large crowd, or we're anticipating a couple hundred, I acquired a speaker system from the Story County Democrats. They're very kindly offering us one to use for free. I contacted some interest groups and aims like Moms Demand Action, and we, you know, kind of talked about the logistics of getting some community members there and spreading the word in the community as well as at the high school.
Well, take us ahead to the actual event. This will be on April 20th, is that right?
That is correct. April 20th at around 10:40 a.m. at Brookside is when we're anticipating to be there.
So this will be at Brookside Park in Ames. And people can, there's plenty of parking there, plenty of access, and the public can show up. Is that correct?
That is correct.
What sort of things are you anticipating there? Now, the police department helped. They're helping you to anticipate logistical issues and how to be safe and all that sort of thing. And you're very satisfied, is that correct, with what they've done as a resource?
Yes, I am. They've been very helpful.
Well, now, when it comes to that actual activity, I hope that they're going to be decent weather, first of all, especially in view of the context of which we're speaking today, where hopefully we're having the last day of winter for 2018.
Please.
And I think the main thing here is, beyond the weather, you're going to get a turnout. I was just wondering if any of you experienced, there's two kinds of pushback when you have something like this happen. Number one, there's institutional pushback. Now, apparently you didn't get much of that from the administration or from community resources. But privately, what sort of things have you experienced, all three of you? What kinds of things have you heard from students, or are there people who have really expressed opposing opinions to you? What sort of experiences have you had on that score?
I haven't had a lot of personal pushback, but we recently saw that some students are trying to organize an anti-walkout on May 2nd. So that's just one of the things I've noticed.
I didn't receive any like crazy backlash where anything was violent or physical.
I haven't received a ton of backlash either. There is, you know, a conservative group at Ames High School who, on the day of the walkout, they're planning to wear Second Amendment shirts and things like that. But that's certainly their right. They're doing it in a respectful way, so I can't really complain about that. There's just at Ames High School, there's more of respectful disagreement rather than shouting and name-calling. That being said, on our Instagram page, we have had to delete some comments on some of our posts because people have been saying some not great things. But other than that, it's, you know, we really can't complain.
Oh. Well, what you're talking about really is Iowa Nice, I think.
Yeah.
Even at the high school level, and certainly in my small town here of Story City, and to a large degree in Ames, and even Des Moines, you're going to have a lot of people who will respectfully disagree. But for you folks who are actively involved in high school and perhaps more acquainted and involved on a momentary basis with the digital world and all the social networks, you just pointed out something that really makes all of our discussions a lot less civil these days, and that is in social media. And mm-hmm. You've seen right there where people feel they have a degree of anonymity can really be ugly, right?
There were some negative comments on the Instagram. Not a lot, but definitely people are a little less kind online rather than face-to-face.
Excuse me. I have to break in because we have another guest representing what's happening in Boone, which is quite different from Ames. Because we have just one phone line, Paul, I think we're going to have to ask you to leave the discussion so we can call Landra Reese.
Great. Just call me back if you need me.
Okay.
You're not only articulate, but you are so totally descriptive of what's happening and letting us know what will be happening in Brookside Park on the 20th of April.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thanks. Nice talking with you.
Yeah, good here.
Hello, Landra.
Hello.
Have you been able to hear our discussion?
Yes, I have.
Great. Okay, so you know what the situation here is in Ames. Now, I think it's a different story in Boone. It says you're going to have a walkout, but is that going to be happening?
I believe so. So what is happening is I'm probably the most politically active person in my high school, and so fortunately but unfortunately, I graduated the middle of the semester so that I could become a page at the Iowa State Senate. And in doing that, I kind of lost some of my contacts at the high school. And since I'm in Des Moines almost all the time, I'm not able to communicate as well as I would be if I were at Boone every day. And so, yeah, I tried to organize, rallied up some like-minded friends and said, hey, we're going to do this. Because I was at the original planning meetings for the rally at the Iowa State Capitol for the Iowa Students United Against Gun Violence. And so I'm in that. And so as part of that, I, tried to rally students from Boone and said, hey, I'm probably going to be in Des Moines this day, but I would love it if you guys could walk out, come to the Capitol to talk to legislators. And so in doing that, I did get a friend, talk to some friends, just communicate via social media about what we're planning on doing. And there was a ton of pushback for that. And then we also tried to contact our administration. I have not received any replies from them as, if they would just not support us in any way, if they would be able to let us go out during our Torador time, which is when you're kind of in like a study hall.
I'd like to weigh in a little bit on that. There is a wonderful website to get people all over the country involved with the nearest walkout. And as I mentioned, there were 2,400 sites. And they all had, it was a kind of a template. Everybody had the name of theirs, No More, or, and this is one of my favorites, though. This is the Southview Middle School in Ankeny. Ankeny has three schools involved, two middle schools and the high school. And the middle school, they said that the template is, on April 20th, the anniversary of the Columbine High School shooting, American students will walk out of class and protest. Together, we will send a message that we won't tolerate any more inaction on this issue. And if cowardly politicians fail to act, young people will show them the consequences of letting so many Americans die by voting them out in November. That's the template. And then they continue. When we do this, be respectful to those learning, but share your voice. Make signs to share your voice and walk out with reason. Walk out, and then in parentheses, walk out because you want better gun laws, not because your friends walk out or you want to get out of class. End of parenthesis. This protest is peaceful, so no violence. We will stay on school grounds, but may join the high school if they decide to protest. And this is, the title is, This Is Me Next.
That's awesome. And to have such young people doing that is just great.
Nevada High School announced that they're planning to visit the Capitol and visit Representative Dave Dio. And I checked with the high school, and by coincidence, they're having a day of service.
Is that in Nevada?
That's Nevada, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but I talked to the principal, who seemed to not know. He just said, you know, this is not part of our day of service. We don't really have anything to do with that. It was a real hands-off. We're not encouraging this. We don't regard this as part of the day of service.
You know, really what we're doing for Iowa Students United Against Gun Violence, our rally at the Capitol, is kind of taking all voices and giving everyone a seat at the table. And so I think that the fact that there's gun violence is something that we can all agree on, whether you're on the way far right, whether you're on the way far left. It's just that we have different opinions on how it can be stopped or how it should be stopped. So I think that, you know, as long as you have good reasoning and you have a lot of respect, you can bring your voice to the table. And so, like, something that I'm doing in my community to call for, you know, less gun violence, or something that I think that would help, you know, there's not just one answer to this problem. There's not just one solution. And so, you know, things that I'm calling for are increased funding for mental health care in the state of Iowa, in childhood and early, or, you know, like, teen and early adult mental health care programs, because we don't really have one of those in Iowa. Calls for, you know, training for police on racial bias and implicit bias. More funding to police officers for community policing programs. excuse me. So, you know, where they can go out, they can play basketball, you know, they can have barbecues with the community in order to kind of break down the barriers that people see between police officers and the citizens, whether you feel that there are barriers there or not. You know, it's just something to break down barriers and become friends and create a healthy relationship with police officers, because, you know, they're here to serve us and they're here to protect us. And then, so increased funding for police officers, and then more training, community policing programs, and then more funding for counselors at high schools, counselors at all levels of schools, elementary, middle, high school, and then higher education, because I think that, you know, we don't necessarily need cops in schools. We don't necessarily need armed teachers. We just need people who are there to listen all the time. And then, you know, funds for calling, you know, calling for more funding to DHS, because as you saw in Florida, the shooter was a straight white male who was 19, but he also, like, had lost his parents. He had a really rough home life, and so maybe if, you know, he would have been reached out to at a barbecue with a police officer when he was younger, that would have helped. Maybe if he had a counselor to go to in middle school where he could talk about his problems and kind of let them out in a positive way, he could have been helped. Like, there are many solutions. Calling for stricter background checks that is a solution. Calling for banning of bump stocks, that is a solution too. There are so many solutions and problems, just that we're not looking at any of the solutions right now. And some people are not even agreeing that there is a problem, which is quite unfortunate.
Thank you, Landra. And thanks to Thomas DeLay.
Thank you.
And Grace Kim and Lou.co.
Thank you.
We really appreciate your coming in today to explain to everybody what's going to happen with the National Student Walkout on Friday.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Before I go into the outro, I really need to remind you that this kind of programming where students from the communities speak up and speak out. Thank you for being with us, and thank you to our listeners for keeping us on the air so this can continue to happen and we can continue to have programs like this. And this is going to be an exciting week here on Local Talk because we're going to do live shows not just in the morning but at noon. And, for example, this evening we're going to have a Pantorium session, a live concert broadcast at 7 p.m. And this will be The Cable Man, a solo project of singer-songwriter Caleb Coonan from Nevada, Iowa. Caleb's performance is held in conjunction with the Access One Blue String Initiative, which promotes sexual assault awareness. His concert will be broadcast from 7 to 8 tonight. Next week, we'll have some look back on Main Street with Marge Junkin and other longtime business owners on both Local Talk and Heart of Iowa. Mark Witherspoon of the ISU Journalism Department will come in to talk about fake news and other issues facing us all. Concerns with the war on truth are among the many things that make KHOI especially valuable at this time. Please consider that as you remember whether you're going to renew your membership or give us an extra contribution. Basic membership is $55. Premier membership is $100. Sustaining memberships, $20 per month or more. This is mostly volunteer run, as you know, so our costs are low. You can pledge by calling 515-292-2878, and you can always join or renew your membership by coming in at the Pantorium at 410 Douglas. Go to our website, khoifm.org, and press the donate button. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Paul Wearson and I, Susan Franzen, have been your hosts for today. Other voices you heard were Luke Gran, Amy Taylor, Cecilia Bust, Landra Reese, Tom DeLay, Grace Kim, and Luda Cull. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. That's khoifm.org, and you can like us on Facebook and get updates on all of our show postings in your news feed. Local Talk was engineered by Jackie Norman. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. A Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878 or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you decide to become a member or renew your membership today. Just look for the yellow donate button. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI meaningful and possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.
For KHOI comes from ISU Theater, presenting Our Town, a story of a small New England town at the turn of the last century. April 20th through the 29th in Ames. Tickets and showtimes available at theater.iastate.edu.